Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Three, two, one. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Thursday edition, creeping up on Friday. And we got a fine guest creeping into the... You're not a creep. I don't mean to characterize our good friend, podcaster, pundit. He's Bill Press. You know him. You love him. Welcome back, Bill.
Hey, Bill.
I'm happy to creep in anytime.
Sometimes, you know, I try a little too hard. You know how it goes.
Man, I got to tell you. I hope you're having a better time breathing in Madison and Chicago and wherever you are than we are in Washington, D.C. It is ugly, man. This smoke from the wildfires, it's really, I mean, you know, I wore a mask the whole time, and half the people I ran into were wearing masks.
Wow.
Not because of COVID, because they couldn't breathe the freaking smoke, right? It's bad out there.
I thought it was perhaps because the House caucus was burning itself down, Bill.
Well, that too. I mean, don't you love it? I've nobody believed me, but I always said Steve Scalise would stab Kevin McCarthy in the back in a Louisiana second, right? A New Orleans second. And boy, it's showing now. I think that, Steve is helping to stir this up. I think he sees... He's like two or three votes away from taking over as Speaker of the House.
You think Scalise is going after the speakership? I mean, obviously there's strife going on right now, Bill. And I guess my impression is that's not because the Republicans won the debt ceiling battle.
Well, little Kevin thinks he won, right? But the Freedom Caucus doesn't think they won, and they think he betrayed them. And I thought it was very telling when somebody, one of the reporters asked Steve Scalise, well, what is it that McCarthy didn't give them that they want? And Scalise says, I've no idea because I've no idea what Kevin agreed to or what he agreed to give away. Yeah, that's not so good coming from your number two guy. The fact that McCarthy had to shut down the House for the rest of the week, he's as out of control as Chris Licht was at CNN. You know, they both go down in flames.
Well, apparently McCarthy. Well, we'll see, because Chris Licht started before McCarthy, and he's out at CNN, as you pointed out. And Kevin McCarthy, hell, he probably has till next week since they're not meeting on the floor again, folks. You're listening to the Devil's Advocate. Hold that thought, Bill. Let me get the show name out for the people.
Oh, sorry.
We are the Devil's. You know, Bill, you can interrupt me anytime you want to, man. We are the Devil's Advocates. He's Bill Press, our friend, constant interrupter of, you know, on occasion. Bill, are you on the Donald Trump indictment watch? We're on the edge of our seats. We heard it could be today. The Jack Smith dropped the federal indictments, the ones that would sting. It'd be hard for him to play those down as a partisan local prosecutor.
Well, he'll just play it as, you know, the continuation of the Democratic witch hunt, which has been going on for 8 years, and it's the longest witch hunt in the history of humankind, and it's all engineered by Hillary Clinton. I don't know. What the hell? I mean, but... Yeah, I have been on the indictment watch every day. I can't wait for that other shoe to drop. And Mike, save the tape, right? But not my guess, I'm convinced it will drop. Donald Trump will be indicted. He'll be indicted in Florida by the grand jury there, and maybe also, probably also by the grand jury in Washington, D.C. And this is, you're right, this is serious, serious stuff. This is the Department of Justice saying that Donald Trump knew what he was doing, deliberately took confidential documents from the White House he had no right to take to Mar-a-Lago, and then was personally involved in hiding them and refusing to turn them over. And when he turned some of them over, he hid some more of them, and he knew exactly what he was doing all the way. So that's a federal crime. So I believe he'll be indicted. I think he'll be found guilty of a felony. And as James Comey said last week, he could end up addressing the Republican convention, you know, with an ankle around, what do they call the?
Ankle bracelet.
Ankle bracelet, right.
Perhaps
if not behind bars.
Perhaps one for each ankle from multiple jurisdictions.
Bill, no, since we last spoke.
Wait a minute. He'll have them all the way up to the knee because he's got Manhattan. He's got New York State. He's got Georgia. You know, both legs are going to be wrapped in ankle.
He'll be like one of the hustlers on the corner selling watches, you know, all wrapped up. Which one you want? I got plenty of them. Bill, since we last spoke, this Florida grand jury, news to me this week also, apparent confirmation has been reported, Mark Meadows testifying before at least one grand jury, perhaps two. Obviously, Mark Meadows, chief of staff, involved around all sorts of different little parts of the investigations, different investigations into Donald Trump. Is that lights out with Meadows is out there telling the truth, apparently? According to the reporting at The Independent, which Mark Meadows' attorney said was BS, that Mark will plead guilty to something and testify against Trump.
We know so little about this, right? So we got to be careful. But having been around the track a while, right, I don't think Mark Meadows testified for one reason only, to save his ass.
Save Mark Meadows, right?
No, to save Mark Meadows, exactly. Yeah. Not to help Donald Trump. And because it was the way it was going down, and we know from the January 6th committee that Mark Meadows was maybe, I don't know about the document side, but on the January 6th insurrection side, he was a key instigator and a key player. So I think he realizes they're coming after him too, at least on that other front. And that maybe he could make a deal here by helping them out on the document side. The fact that he tests, and there are other former Trump aides, right, who were at Mar-a-Lago who have testified as well. I think this Jack Smith he's doing an excellent job. He's a tough SOB, and when he comes down, he won't come down unless he's got the goods. The question facing the Republican Party is, you've got a lot of other alternatives. Why are you still so in love with a guy who's got so much baggage and is such a proven loser? You want to lose everything again? Fine. Go with the crook, right?
Bill, my greatest fear is that Trump, through the indictment process, is going to be pulled out of the nomination effectively, and all of a sudden we're going to have a whole new candidate, and the whole sort of trapped in this symbiotic relationship, Joe Biden and Donald Trump. The rationale for Biden's candidacy is Donald Trump will be the nominee for the Republicans. If Trump is not, what is the rationale for the Joe Biden candidacy?
Look, I hear what you're saying, right? Two things. Number one, I think you have to look at this as an American and not just as a Democrat, all right? Yes, as a Democrat, I want Donald Trump to be the nominee, and I want Joe Biden to crush him by more than 7 million votes, 14 million votes, and every other freaking Republican is running. Just wipe them out, right? Take over the Senate, take over the House by 20, 30 votes, right? And get rid of Donald Trump and the whole MAGA movement. As an American, the idea that we would even consider giving Donald Trump a second term is a national embarrassment. I mean, for every reason to save our democracy for one. Now, having said that, the ration, yes, I'd rather run against Donald Trump because I think he's definitely the weakest candidate. He's got 30%, Republicans maybe 25, it's shrinking. But that's not the rationale for Biden's presidency. The rationale for a second term for Joe Biden is he's done a damn good job for the first term, and he's gotten so much done, and he's restored normalcy. Do you see it today? We got the strongest market we've had in, I don't know, 10, 15, 20 years, right? Things are working. They're getting things done. They got the debt ceiling done. They got a budget deal done. They got the COVID bill done. They got the infrastructure bill done. They got the first gun control in some 30-some years. I sound like I'm in the Biden campaign. But the fact is, in his own steady, non-dramatic way, Joe Biden delivers. And he's also kind of brought bipartisanship back to the table. You know, everything he's done with Republican votes. When he did, yeah. You know,
it's a great point, Bill. We just got about 90 seconds left in this segment. Bill Press, our friend, Chris Christie comes out. Now, of course, you know, the Republicans, they're starting to line up now. I don't know if they smell the blood in the water, Mike Pence as well. But I thought Christie came out and actually told the truth and was very critical. Did you hear any of Christie? And what's your sense of, you know, these Republicans finally, at least one of them, seemingly telling their truth?
Well, the column is out today about Chris Christie. And what I said, the end of my column is, if I were a Republican primary voter, I would vote for Chris Christie because he's the only one telling the truth. He's the only one willing to take it to Donald Trump. Look, Christie's a flawed candidate. He doesn't have a prayer, right? Unless Trump has a heart attack or goes to jail. But even then, he probably doesn't have a prayer. But Chris Christie is at least willing to take it to Donald Trump, and he's right. Unless you take it to Trump, you can't beat Trump. So I like Chris Christie's style. I think he's doing a public service in the Republican primary, and he makes the other candidates look like, you know, weaklings.
Yeah. I suspect he only does it for self-enrichment. You know, like a new gig over on Fox News or a book or whatever. He ain't doing it for freebie. Bill, your check's in the mail, sir. Come back, more of us. And Bill Press, no, I kid. We're not paying you. More Devil's Advocates. It's Thursday, right? I think it's Thursday.
Yes. Friday.
Warning, listening to the Devil's Advocates may expose you to opposing views.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Be sure to follow us on the Twitter at Devil Radio, on Facebook at the Devil's Advocates Radio. And if you want to listen to the podcast interviews, check out the civicmedia.us webpage. Go to the shows tab and find all the shows on Civic Media.
Dom, we got a fine guest. He stuck around. He is Bill Press, podcaster, pundit, friend of the Devil's Advocates. Bill, thanks for sticking. Yeah, the one that's got me a little nervous in the Republican field is fascist wannabe Ron DeSantis. And while I see a lot of parallels between him and the candidacy of Scott Walker, like a guy that looked good on paper, but when he got on the road, just didn't play, you know, outside of Main Street Tallahassee or whatever the case may be. But Bill, what's your impression? If it wasn't Donald Trump, somebody's got to win. Someone's got to come out of that Republican field that's getting broader by the moment. And I've been predicting Donald Trump, but of course, I can't account for federal indictments in my math. Although, you know, I think Dom's been doing so. So what's your thought, Bill? Who's plan B for the Republicans?
Well, again, at this point, there is no plan B. I mean, despite all of his baggage and all of the indictments that are just about bound to fall, it looks like the Republicans are determined we're over a year away, right? So we're all talking to go with Donald Trump. I don't get it. I don't understand it. Among the rest of the field, I don't think there's any of them that are really strong. You know, DeSantis, yeah, he's got Florida, but I'm not sure it sells. I'm not sure it sells to go to Iowa and say, we're going to make Iowa like Florida. We're going to make Utah like Florida. We're going to make California like Florida. I mean, really? Like Disney, you're going to go after every company that, that doesn't like something you might do and says, so plus he's, I'm not the only one. I've never met him, but everything I've seen on television, he's stiff as a fence post. Yeah. I mean, he makes Mike Pence look, you know, like a good happy-go-lucky guy compared to, and look how stiff Mike Pence is. So who's it going to be? Not Doug Burgum, not Larry Elder, not Vivek Ramaswamy, whatever his name
not
is.
Not Tim Scott. Not Tim Nikki Scott. Haley.
No, not Nikki Haley, right. So, you know, knock him down. I'll tell you what I'm looking for, and not Chris Christie, but I'm looking forward to Chris Christie on stage in the debates with Donald Trump, if that ever happens. There are those who say Donald Trump will never agree to get on the stage with him. He'd be a fool to do so, because we remember what Chris Christie did to little Marco in 2016, and he'd go after Donald Trump. But so I'm not really afraid of DeSantis. I would have to say, among the rest of them, DeSantis is the strongest of a weak field. So I thought Chris Sununu would have been the most attractive candidate, because there's no doubt about his pedigree, his conservative pedigree, and he's a good governor and a good talker, and I think would have had a broader appeal. He wisely decided maybe not to go.
Well, and perhaps he didn't want the damage that comes and the pain that comes from running against Donald Trump. Over at the Raw Story, I like to go over to the Raw Story occasionally, the Disaggregator. They're reporting, or more accurately, Rolling Stone is reporting, apparently the Trump team, they see DeSantis as their primary challenger. And it's coming. And they're going to start, they're going to start calling him Tiny D, apparently for his genitalia size. And they're going there. I mean,
wait.
That's Trump's plan. They're calling DeSantis Tiny D.
No. Whoa. Let me get this straight. The guy with the little hands is going to call DeSantis Little D?
Up until now, that's been my nickname for Dominic.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. That's Crudy. He can go to hell. That's Bill Press. He's our friend. Thank you, Bill, for sticking around. And that's, I mean, this is how asinine it gets. I expect nothing more juvenile from Trump and his crew. So hopefully that will be, you know, people will come to their senses, Bill, and reject it. But we're looking at, what, 8 weeks-ish from the first debate here in this, in Milwaukee. Yeah. The Fox News debate is coming out like 8 weeks-ish, Bill. Do you think, and here's my concern, number one, that Trump won't show up, because number one, Trump will never, ever support anybody who's the head of the ticket if it ain't him. So how do you think that plays out with the rest of these candidates here in Milwaukee, Bill?
And are you going to come party with us, Bill? That's the real question.
Yeah, for the debate. No.
Listen, maybe, you know, that's a good idea. I'd love to come. I'd love to come for that. It's going to be a clown car, just like it was the last time around. And if Donald Trump will, I would predict Donald Trump will not show up. He'll never agree to support the nominee. And that's one of the rules. By the way, I have to tell you, so much for Mike Pence's backbone. He comes out and says, Donald Trump totally unfit to be president of the United States. We can never elect a guy. It's either the Constitution or Donald Trump, right? And then he turns around and says, oh, yeah, I'll support the nominee of the party if it's Donald Trump. I mean, Jesus, you know, nothing.
Would you pardon him? I can't say publicly.
Yeah, right. Hey, Don, I didn't really mean it. You know what I mean? God. That's going to be a circus. Plus I have to get, what, 40,000 donors, right, in the next 8 weeks? But all they need is $1 apiece.
Right.
Hell, I'll send Chris Christie $1 just to get him on
stage. Just to get him on stage, right.
Did I hear correctly? I heard Mike Pence's new campaign slogan is Hang Mike Pence. You know, tip of the cap to the January 6th people. Didn't want to disaffect
him. I think they were
going
to do it, but I think Don Jr. tried to trademark it already.
Yeah, the thing, by the way, it's not that Trump is going to start taking on DeSantis and humiliating him. He started a long time ago. I love the fact when he said DeSantis needs a personality transplant, but they're not doing those anymore. Boy, don't go against Trump unless you want to be destroyed.
He is Bill Press, personality, podcaster, pundit, friend of the Devil's Advocates.
All right, guys.
That means Crudy and Little D. Stick around. Stick around. Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Morning Cannolis, another friend. We like our friends. More Devils.
Thanks for the debate.
Leave the gun. Take the cannoli.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, rolling through a happier, happy hour, Thursday style. Want to thank our most recent guest, a fine one, our friend, podcaster, pundit, Bill Press. Bill, open invitation. Anytime you want a party, cowboy, we got a party for you in Wisconsin. And we got a fine guest joining us right now live via Zoom. He is former U.S. attorney and, more importantly, host of the Morning Cannolis right here on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 on Saturday mornings. Jim, I note that many have taken notice of your fine show. We appreciate you joining us on the greatest radio show ever. No offense to other hosts.
Hey, Jim.
Good to be with both of you, gentlemen. Good to be back.
Jim, I was encouraged. Breaking headline from the U.S. Supreme Court, first one I saw this morning. Mm-hmm. A majority written by Roberts,
yes,
and endorsed by Kavanaugh and all of the, let's call them the liberal members of the court, voted to what? Basically preserve voting rights and to push back on the Republican agenda, which is to pack Black voters, Democratic voters, but specifically Black voters in Alabama into one singular district and dilute their representation. Do I have that mostly correct?
Precisely correct. Absolutely, as always. And it was a pleasant surprise, but it was surprise, I think, to many, many people, including me. This comes out of Alabama, way back in right after the 2020 census. The legislature there had redrawn some lines to do exactly what you described, which is to disenfranchise Black voters there. And again, this goes up to the Supreme Court. And the reason why it was important, of course, to Alabama, but to the larger world was that, and is that, the concern was the Supreme Court might use this as yet another opportunity to diminish even further the Voting Rights Act and say, well, we're going to substitute a new standard that permits you to, you can articulate any one basis for drawing the lines as you do. That's enough. And even if one of them may be racially motivated, that's okay. And there's a great concern, once again, that this might have been the sort of the trifecta of putting the Voting Rights Act to its death. There were a couple of earlier cases, one called Brnovich out of Arizona, you may recall, we chatted about, one called Shelby County. And people thought this might be the third one. And it turns out it's not. And as you indicated, we have the Chief Justice, who in the past has been hostile, frankly, to voting rights. And so that's a surprise. Arguably just as surprising as you indicated, Brett Kavanaugh joins John Roberts and then also joins Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan and Ketanji Brown Jackson to say that the Alabama legislature did this improperly, sends it back, says redraw the lines and ensure that this time, basically, you include Black voters who had tried to disenfranchise before. It is a huge victory, a very important, again, ruling, not just for Alabama, but also for all of us, because could have an impact here in Wisconsin as well if those kinds of issues are addressed down the road.
Well, that's exactly where I want to go next, Counselor. You've led me properly.
me too.
Obviously, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, we're waiting for the impanelment of Justice Janet Protasiewicz. That comes August 1st, I believe. Right. Anytime thereafter, I'm okay with them taking up a lawsuit challenging the validity of the current redistricted maps. And I would say on both the legislative level, state legislature, it's god awful, a little bit less god awful on the congressional level, but really they were crafted with purpose. And my greater concern is they get overturned. Let's say that the Wisconsin Supreme Court sees the merits of overturning the current maps. Well, it wouldn't be a shocking or unusual move for Wisconsin Republicans to go running to the federal courts and want to get all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. Does it seem less likely, Jim, in the face of this ruling, that the U.S. Supreme Court is going to want to go grab up another quote-unquote voting rights trial subsequently, shortly thereafter, if that makes sense, Jim?
Absolutely.
Am I making sense at all today, Jim? Because I'm really starting to question myself.
It is clear. There are complete sentences with verbs and nouns, all those kinds of things. So it's always my challenge, not yours.
I get no reassurance from Dom. He just looks at me with the same face. Like, you're out on your plank here, Crudy. Go nuts.
Talk your way through it. You'll be fine.
You're on your own. Being on your own in this instance is a good thing because, again, you got it just right. If in fact there is a movement, and I think most of us are aware of the fact that there are people anticipating the change in our Wisconsin Supreme Court to a 4-3 so-called liberal majority, which again is always difficult, as you indicated, and these labels don't always hold. We're not always certain. Brian Hagedorn has surprised us in the past in both directions. But if in fact that stays and holds, and there are people out there, again, you've got to have a lawsuit, you've got to have a new lawsuit. Supreme Court doesn't simply wake up on August 2nd and say, well, gee, let's go back and revisit what we did a couple of years ago. If there's a lawsuit and you can find people who have, let's say the word out loud, standing to say that I was disenfranchised, presumably by virtue of those lines drawn after the 2020 census here, but probably in the 2022 election, I was disenfranchised. There may be some voters of color in the south side of Milwaukee, in the northern part of the state, may have been Native American populations, others around the state, and can say that because of those lines, I was denied the possibility of having representation in the state house, as you said, arguably in the Congress, got a new lawsuit, goes up to the circuit court. Typically a trial judge makes a finding about whether or not indeed that claim is real, makes it up to an appeals court in Wisconsin, and then ultimately to the Supreme Court. And again, the presumption would be, for two reasons you just identified, we will have a court as of August 1, August 2nd, that is a whole lot more receptive to those kinds of issues. And second, now we've got an affirmation, that is, the ink is still wet on the opinion coming out of the Supreme Court that says, yes, indeed, there is this use of the Voting Rights Act under the present, continuing, and even traditional standard that is applicable here. And you could have a return, or at least a revisiting of this entire lines issue. You can still obviously take that up to the Supreme Court, but again, playing this out as you just did, Supreme Court a whole lot less likely to go back and certainly use any other case to reverse what it just did today. And so this is a huge case, not only for, again, the nation, but also for Wisconsin in cementing the theory of revisiting here in Wisconsin, and certainly will be used in the briefs, in the oral arguments to circuit courts, appellate courts, and the Supreme Court. You use this case coming out of Alabama as a justification for revisiting the disenfranchisement of voters here in Wisconsin.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. That's James Santel, host of Morning Cannolis Saturdays here on the Civic Media Network. More importantly, a friend of the Devil's Advocates. Jim, always a pleasure to talk with you. I guess one step forward, two steps back as regards to the voting rights law. But let's talk about the headlines of the day. Apparently, Donald Trump, his attorneys have been informed that he is a target of an investigation. Of course, we all knew this, but that seems like a formality, Jim. What does that mean? Are our indictments imminent? And what does imminent mean to you, Jim?
Right. Let's go to the dictionary, right? So what happened here, and this is fairly routine, it is a good sign. It's a tea leaf that we can read. My first reaction was just the same as yours, Dom, which was sort of, duh, he's a target. I think we've known that for a long time. And if you didn't know that, you were sleeping under a rock somewhere. So not a surprise in terms of the notion that Jack Smith, the special counsel, is focusing on him, both for the Mar-a-Lago documents matter and also January 6th, these two large pockets of attempted or investigation and potential prosecution of him. So what happens is, a part of the regular standard procedure, I did this routinely for 30 years. as you are to the point in any investigation, could be violent crime, could be white collar crime, you typically send a letter to the counsel and you say, and again, typically it is paper cases, situations where the defendant may not be in custody, may not have been charged yet. You send a letter saying, you know what, we're close. And we're inviting you based, we're telling you, number one, that you are a target. That's kind of the top level. The other category would be a subject, meaning we're looking at you. And there's a witness, which means we're not really looking at you in terms of criminal charging, but you're involved in some way. This is at the top of the level. The attorneys for Donald Trump have received that letter from the Department of Justice saying, your guy, your client is in our focus. And they certainly are sending the message. These attorneys are bright enough, perhaps to understand a letter, if not bright enough to run from Donald Trump's representation. But they understand what that is. They basically can now call up Jack Smith and say, hey, before you do this, can we come in and talk with you about why it is that Donald Trump, our client, should not be charged? And probably they made this attempt, and they were at the Department of Justice just earlier this week. They may go back now and have that conversation. Unlikely that will produce a whole lot, but it's not a bad thing for prosecutors always to talk to defense counsel in these situations. And as you indicated, then the question is, what does that mean in terms of timing? It means that the investigation is pretty much done. They wouldn't be doing this if they had not already made the internal decision to charge. And that's why the news is big, that what it would reflect upon is that the intellectual decision has been made to charge Donald Trump with something. We don't know exactly what that is. My general sense is it's not going to be tomorrow, could be next week, sometime soon. But again, typically you let the process, you give them a little bit of time to respond, and you may want to cross your T's and dot your I's and a few more things. My guess is sometime, maybe later this month, maybe in the month of our nation's independence celebration in July, it finally may be the day that Mike has been waiting for all these many years.
I want it now, Daddy. He's Jim Santel. He is the host of Morning Cannoli, Saturday mornings right here on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11. And, you know, if they played their cards right, you'd have a wonderful show on Saturday morning. Right. Jim, my question, jurisdiction. We learned through recent reporting that there is a Florida grand jury, and Trump resides in Palm Beach, which is just north of Miami. And my understanding is one of the federal judges down there is the infamous Eileen Cannon. What is the likelihood she pops up and catches this trial, Jim? Could you imagine?
Could we imagine? She, once again, the judge who had to be slapped down, not literally, but jurisprudentially, if you will, by the 11th Circuit after she tried to shut down through this civil litigation, the investigation of the Mar-a-Lago thing, decisive opinion telling her that she's wrong a number of months ago. So that has proceeded. The other reason why this particular set of tea leaves is interesting is has to do with, yes, jurisdiction generally to charge crimes, but the civics word that we've been banding about, the three of us, is venue, which is where do you bring that lawsuit? And typically, so for example, when Dom robs a bank, you bring that lawsuit in the place where the bank robbery happened. That may be Milwaukee, that could be Madison, that could be Wausau, someplace else where they actually happened. Here you've got more options. Why? Because plainly with respect to the documents case, well, they were taken out of Washington, D.C., so that's one venue. But as I look at this, remember at the time that the search warrant affidavit was released, there was that reference to obstruction. That almost certainly happened in South Florida, right? Once the boxers are there, there's an attempt to recover them. And to the extent that this investigation is also focusing on that, which it surely is, it may well be that venue, the place where the crime was committed, the obstruction actually happened no longer at the White House, but in Mar-a-Lago, other places in South Florida. So that's why one possibility. The other one could be that there's some other tendril thing going on with respect to a small aspect of this. We've seen that before, but it does indicate again that the Department of Justice has probably got a working draft of at least one, if not two, maybe in three indictments that contemplate charges by a grand jury in a couple of different spots, South Florida being one of them.
Jim, just 60 seconds left in this segment. Is it possible that he could be charged for the quote-unquote documents, classified documents crimes in Florida and D.C.?
You could have separate pieces if indeed there are actions in one that are different from the actions in another district. You could do that. You could have different defendants. Again, depends upon how Jack Smith decides to parse this out. And so he could get multiple indictments on multiple packages of prosecutions in these various venues. Absolutely.
I think I read Paul Manafort, the former Trump campaign manager,
right,
had multiple indictments in multiple jurisdictions.
D.C. and Virginia. Yep.
Stick around, counselor. He is Jim Santel, host of Morning Cannolis, Where the Devil's Advocates. We'll be right back.
The Devil's Advocates may not agree on much, but funny is funny.
And we're back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show, counting down to Trump's indictment. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, friend of the Devils, and of course, host of Morning Cannolis on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 on Saturdays. Jim, thanks for sticking around. Not only did we not know until this week that there was a Florida grand jury, also apparently confirmed through reporting that Mark Meadows, the former chief of staff, has testified and apparently will, you know, plead guilty to something and offer testimony again. All reporting,
perhaps multiple charges.
Right. So, how important is Meadows' potential testimony here, in your opinion, Jim?
It's got to be huge. If you think about it, this fellow's the chief of staff. And I know we always think about, the vice president is a person who's at the left or right hand of the president. Not really true, even in terms of where their offices are located inside the West Wing. It's the chief of staff who is talking in the president's ear all the time, and probably in the case of Donald Trump, in whose ear Donald Trump is talking. So throughout the last portion of the Trump administration, Mark Meadows, the chief of staff, the gatekeeper there of the of the White House and of the Oval Office in particular, lots and lots of conversations, probably on the hour with the president about various things. So I would offer that as significant as was the Mike Pence testimony in front of the grand jury a couple of weeks ago, a fellow who just yesterday declared for his own candidacy for the presidency, Mark Meadows is probably the person closest in terms of again, intimate conversations with the president during all these times, probably has information both about January 6th, which I guess would be the key, but maybe also about Mar-a-Lago too. You certainly ask him about that too, probably had continued involvement. We know too that at least one of these tapes had to, from where the president indicated he knew about classified documents. That happened when Mark Meadows was talking with him about his own memoir. So this guy has got a lot of information, a lot of direct ability to tell about a conversation here, there, that happened on these topics. My guess is spending a lot of time before the grand jury. And again, if there was a decision made internally that some of his conduct fell in the category of crimes, not only was he talking, but talking about crimes, talking about doing things, again, I would suspect generally for January 6th purposes, he may himself be the target of one of these indictments or not, depending upon how things play out. But certainly any deal that he makes with the government would involve his providing testimony before what? The grand jury, which he is plainly doing, and also a trial, which is the big one, right? After all this is charged, you got to get somebody to come up there and say, on this particular date, on January 5th, on November 10th, on January 19th, the president said this to me, and this is why it's relevant. He is perhaps at the top of the list, probably, of all of these folks who've appeared from the grand jury, a major figure. We haven't heard the last of him yet.
You know, I don't recall all of the reporting in fine detail, but one of the allegations against Mark Meadows was he committed voter fraud in his own home state of North Carolina, was it not, Jim? Like, he didn't even live in the home he claimed as his residence where he served, preceding Madison Cawthorn to that fine congressional district.
Right. We saw those photographs of a place which was apparently the address of his actual location for voting purposes. That too, you know, sometimes prosecutors will seize on something that's again related to the larger issue, but it's out here. It addresses a particular provable thing that the defendant did that could also form the basis again for an omnibus plea agreement. You plead guilty to this particular voting fraud problem, other things that are out there. Exchange for that, we will recommend to the judge in the sentencing guidelines a sentence involving some prison time that is less than it otherwise would be. If we simply tried you, you went to trial and were convicted there, that could very well be the negotiation that Mark Meadows is engaged in right now. The fact that the so-called consortium of defense attorneys here, that from them, at least we're hearing implicitly and not explicitly, that Mark Meadows' attorneys have dropped out and dropped off of the email chain, if you will, also indicates that he's not only cooperating, as we know, but is probably forging his own path based upon his own best interests and not those of this larger group and not those of Donald Trump. He is right there. He's got a lot of things to tell a trial jury and probably has told a grand jury, maybe in more than one jurisdiction.
Our fun guest, Jim Santel. Jim, let me ask you. Dissemination. I've always called these the paperwork crimes, the possession of the classified documents. That part, maybe I could forgive. But the part I can't forgive, other than going against the family, is the dissemination. That brings in the Espionage Act. That's a much more significant crime if charged, indicted on that Espionage Act. Right, Jim?
Absolutely. And so, for example, let's do the far comparison. Again, second time the conversation, I'm talking about who? Mike Pence. Mike Pence goes back and says, hey, would you take a look at whether I've got any documents in my Indiana home? They identify a few of them. No, and they come as a surprise. Probably also the same with Joe Biden. A little bit more problematic, a number of different spots, but no indication that they took them because they wanted to show them at the local bar or at the fish fry and Friday, that sort of thing. Donald Trump, again, not only some indication that he was doing this, his own words tend to suggest, even in these town halls that he's doing, which are not helping him, by the way, when it comes to a prosecution, that he has every right to not only declassify them, all he needs to do is do the magic of thinking about that, and he can show them to whoever he wants because he's the former president and he can do all of that. That is not the denial that attorneys would like to hear, which is, no, no, I accidentally had these documents. I did nothing with them. They sat in boxes. And again, I go back to that affidavit in support of the search warrant, 35 pages long. Don was so disappointed that the toner supply went away, that black happened on the pieces of paper. People talked about what was going on with those documents. They're moving around, and my guess is there's information there. And that was, again, July, August of last year. There's more about dissemination since that time, and you better believe that Jack Smith has talked to anybody who knows anything about seeing those documents, using them, purporting to see them. And again, this larger issue, we got Robert Hansen dying just yesterday, yeah. The Soviet spy. We think about that. That's the real matter. And that's the thing that in the opening.
Well, Jim, I mean, that was the first thing I thought of when this whole thing broke a long time ago. And I never want to go there. But yeah, I mean, that is a possibility. A real quick last 60 seconds here. Mark Meadows, didn't he get on a plane and go down to Georgia? I mean, isn't that also a thing? Fannie Willis, last 60 seconds, her case supposed to be imminent as well. Any comments on that, Counselor?
Lots of imminence. She's got an indicting grand jury that could do this. She's kind of alerted the notion that it may happen anytime soon. Mark Meadows also went down there with a group of other people saying nothing to see here. There is something to see here, which is Donald Trump won the election. He might be exposed in Georgia. And also federally for that conduct, too. He's got all things on his docket.
See, you tune in on Saturday mornings to the Morning Cannolis. And these are the sort of insights you're going to get from our good friend, Jim Santel. Jim, thank you for joining us. And everyone, don't forget, we got a fine new lineup. We got another Legal Eagle. She comes next. Maggie Dawn. She's Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel. More importantly, the host of the Maggie Dawn Show. And then Raised in the Wisco with Joel Clayfish and company. Keep it locked right here. Civic Media, all the Patriots do with a shiny new app starting right now. Just go up.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, gentlemen. Take care.
But don't ever take sides with anyone against the family again.
I'm proud to tell you that was actually my sick idea.